Tune in Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, when KBOO Jazz host Rita Rega talks with bassist Chuck Israels about his experiences in the Paris jazz scene in the 1950s, playing with pianist Bud Powell, the real-life inspiration for the film. That's Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, between noon and 2 p.m. on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Bet you know that song, Alice's Restaurant. Well, that means it's a holiday, and you know which one. And this is KBOO Portland, and I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here for Reparations Day Radio. I bet you thought I was going to say it's Genocide Cover-Up Day. Well, it would be if I was indigenous, but I ain't. So it's going to be Reparations Day Radio, and the number to call, you can call in at 503-231-8187, and if you don't call in, well, I got lots of time, and I could play all of Alice's Restaurant if I wanted to, but we'll just leave that as a threat for the moment. 503-231-8187, let's talk about this turkey of a holiday. What if we, the people, rose up and seized the trillions in offshore tax dodger accounts and started paying reparations to the indigenous peoples of this continent? You can tell I'm just trying to throw a little bit of Arlo into it, just a little bit. Maybe a couple of major national parks could be rendered back to First Nations peoples. That's easy enough. And if they preferred the run of the parks to charging people entry fees, well, that would be their lookout, wouldn't it? So if we care about justice, we care about what we did to the indigenous people, and we care about history, maybe we ought to do that. You know, history does matter a hell of a lot. That's why the rich keep trying to bend it. Justice isn't absolutely inaccessible. It just requires a little political will. Now, what if we paid back the descendants of the enslaved Africans who built the first tier of wealth in this country, including the White House? That would hilariously include a certain white supremacist hater who was recently in the news when it was discovered that via his DNA that he was part African. Whoops, surprise! Call in with your comments. 503-231-8187. 40 acres and a mule. That's only $400,000 or so each. No big deal to the richest nation. Remember those trillions? Let's pay back Japanese internees a real amount. Let's pay back descendants of Chinese people worked to death on the rails and the mines. Now, wouldn't that feel good? Wouldn't it feel right? Wouldn't it be a kick? Let's do it. 503-231-8187. Reparations Day Radio on KBOO Portland. I can't do Reparations Day without quoting Howard Zinn. And I think that a lot of you will also find this familiar, but there's still a lot of people who've never heard the story of encountering indigenous people from the European standpoint by Howard Zinn. He wrote Arawak men and women, naked, tawny, and full of wonder, emerged from their villages onto the island's beaches and swam out to get a closer look at a strange big boat. When Columbus and his sailors came ashore carrying swords, speaking oddly, the Arawaks ran to greet them, brought them food, water, and gifts. He later wrote of this in his log. Columbus wrote, "They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawks' bells. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword and they took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, Columbus wrote, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. Portentous words. Howard Zinn wrote, these Arawaks of the Bahama Islands were much like Indians on the mainland who were remarkable, European observers were to say again and again, for their hospitality, for their belief in sharing. These traits did not stand out in the Europe of the Renaissance, dominated as it was by the religion of popes, the government of kings, the frenzy for money that marked Western civilization and its first messenger to the Americas. Christopher Columbus. That's like America's, only it's got more of an er to it, the Americas. Columbus wrote, as soon as I arrived in the Indies, on the first island which I found, I took some of the natives by force in order that they might learn and might give me information of whatever there is in these parts. The information Columbus wanted most was, where is the gold? He had persuaded the king and queen of Spain to finance an expedition to the lands, the wealth he expected would be on the other side of the Atlantic, the Indies and Asia, which is where he thought he was, for, like other informed people of his time, he knew the world was round, and he could sail west in order to get to the far east. Spain had recently been unified. Just my own comment here, a really bloody process, and had its own aspects of, what's the word, chauvinism and racism. But returning to Howard Zinn, one of the new modern nation states, like France, England, and Portugal, its population, mostly poor peasants, worked for the nobility, who were 2% of the population and owned 95% of the land. And departing from Howard Zinn, we've made progress since then. The nobility is 0.01% of the population and owns 95% of the land. But returning to Howard Zinn, Spain had tied itself to the Catholic Church, expelled all the Jews, driven out the Moors. Like other states of the modern world, Spain sought gold, which was becoming the new mark of wealth, more useful than land, because it could buy anything. There was gold in Asia, it was thought, and certainly silks and spices, for Marco Polo and others had brought back marvelous things from their overland expeditions centuries before. Now that the Turks had conquered Constantinople in the eastern Mediterranean and controlled the land routes to Asia, darn it, a sea route was needed. Portuguese sailors were working their way around the southern tip of Africa. Spain decided to gamble on a long sail across an unknown ocean. In return for bringing back gold and spices, they promised Columbus 10% of the profits, governorship over newfound lands, and the fame that would go with a new title, Admiral of the Ocean Sea. He was a merchant's clerk from the Italian city of Genoa, a part-time weaver, the son of a skilled weaver and an expert sailor. He set out with three sailing ships, the largest of which was the Santa Maria, perhaps 100 feet long, 39 crew members. Columbus would never have made it to Asia, whoops, which was thousands of miles further away than he calculated, imagining a smaller world. He would have been doomed by that great expanse of sea, but he was lucky. One quarter of the way there, he came upon an unknown, uncharted land that lay between Europe and Asia, the Americas. It was early October of 1492, and 33 days since he and his crew had left the Canary Islands off the Atlantic coast of Africa. Now they saw branches and sticks floating in the water. They saw flocks of birds. There were signs of land. And then on October 12th, a sailor called Rodrigo saw the early morning moon shining on the white sands and cried out, it was an island in the Bahamas, the Caribbean Sea. The first man to sight land was supposed to get a yearly pension of 10,000 maravedis for life. Maravedis just aren't what they used to be, but Rodrigo never got it. Columbus claimed that he had seen a light the evening before. He got the reward, and so set the tone. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. 87, setting the tone for Reparations Day Radio. Let's pay it back. Why not? So approaching land, they were met by the Arawak Indians, returning to Howard Zinn's narrative, who swam out to greet them. The Arawaks lived in village communes, had a developed agriculture of corn, yams, and cassava, whatever that is. They could spin and weave, but they had no horses or work animals. They had no iron, but they wore tiny gold ornaments in their ears. This was to have enormous consequences. It led Columbus to take some of them aboard ship as prisoners because he insisted that they guide him to the source of the gold. He then sailed off to what is now Cuba, then to Hispaniola, the island which today consists of Haiti and the Dominican Republic. There, bits of visible gold in the rivers, and a gold mask presented to Columbus, whoops, by a local Indian chief, led to wild visions of gold fields on Hispaniola. Out of timbers from the Santa Maria, which had run aground, whoops, Columbus built a fort, the first European military base in the Western Hemisphere. He called it Navidad, Christmas, and left 39 crew members there with instructions to find and store the gold. Seeing a theme here, he took more Indian prisoners and put them aboard his two remaining ships. At one part, At one part of the island, he got into a fight with the Indians, who refused to trade as many bows and arrows as he and his men wanted. Two were run through with swords and bled to death. Then the Niña and the Pinta set sail for the Azores in Spain. When the weather turned cold, the Indian prisoners began to die. Columbus' report to the court in Madrid was extravagant. He insisted he had reached Asia, it was Cuba, and an island off the coast of China, Hispaniola. His descriptions were part fact, part fiction, and quoting Columbus, Hispaniola is a miracle. Mountains and hills, plains and pastures are both fertile and beautiful. The harbors are unbelievably good, and there are many wide rivers of which the majority contain gold. There are many spices and great mines of gold and other metals. The Indians, that's the end of the quote of Mr. Columbus. The Indians, Columbus reported, quote, are so naive and so free with their possessions that no one who has not witnessed them would believe it. When you ask them for something they have, they never say no. To the contrary, they offer to share with anyone, end quote. He concluded his report by asking for a little help from their majesties, and in return he would bring them, from his next voyage, as much gold as they need and as many slaves as they ask. He is full of religious talk, quote, thus the eternal God our Lord gives victory to those who follow his way over apparent impossibilities, end quote. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. It is Turkey Day, and of course, it's a holiday, and a lot of people are off, and a lot of people aren't off, I'm sorry to say. I have to admit, I went and took advantage of some people who were selling coffee. I did give them a large tip. But man, to have to work on a holiday when everybody else is off, it stinks. And, you know, I got mixed feelings about it. But you can call in. I know you're listening. There you are, listening to KBOO Portland. And number to call, 503-231-8187. And we'll welcome your comments and questions as I continue setting the stage for Reparations Day Radio. And hi, you're on the air.
Hey,
Brian.
Hey, it's the old Quahog.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, sober.
Oh, darn. Well, that can
I'll
be fixed.
I'll take care of that later. I wish, you know, somebody on Cebu, if I was still in Portland, I would do it. But, you know, maybe Eugene. There was democracy in this country at one point. It was called the Great Iroquois Confederacy, the Six Nations, which, in fact, the so-called Constitution is based on. But it was a participatory democracy rather than a representative one. And, you know, the slave owners or founding fathers, as they're called, they admired these people very much, but they took it and turned it into a hierarchy, you know, and called it democracy. So I just wanted to throw that in the mix.
That's modern social science.
Yeah,
create a hierarchy and call it democracy because that cuts down on revolts.
Yeah, because everybody, like the every man, woman, and child, were got to put their say into the, you know, the government, and the warriors were the honored guardians of the people, and it was basically socialism and democracy. So I just wanted to throw that in to illustrate perhaps how the invaders bent out of all recognition. And okay, well, have a good one.
Thank you. Same to you.
Ta-da.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, Reparations Day Radio. What if we just gave it back? You know, we got the trillions if we want to take them. And let me ask the engineer again, who just told me what the name of the caller was. Harry is on the air. Hi, Harry.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Doing well.
Did you know that Columbus actually landed in the United States? He landed on the island of St. Croix, which is U.S. Virgin Islands.
As a matter of fact, I was just talking about where Columbus had landed. So you must be just tuning in. So this is Reparations Day Radio. And what do you think about that premise? How about giving it back?
Yes, I think they do need reparations because when Columbus landed, once he looked, he says, well, they have no arms. We can do anything we want.
Gee, that sounds familiar too.
Yeah, and the Spanish did the same thing all the way up till the 1800s because that's how through Mexico and that area there, well, they had swords. They had lances on horses, and they could control the native population through that. Until the United States started moving west, and of course that's why we defeated Mexico and took half of
Mexico. Have you read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States?
No.
Well, I recommend it. Howard Zinn, Z-I-N-N. It's quite a work, and it's well done. And he is now sadly departed, but he was a professor of a college on the East Coast. And this is one of the few books, it might be the only book, that increases in sales every year for more than 20 years. I think it's getting on to 30 years, isn't it? Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States. Other historians I also recommend, Foner, Wasserman, look them up. Thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. You know, we're kind of slow to modernize here at KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland, but I noticed that we now have a screen that the engineer can show me who is calling in. And all these years, we have not had this. And there's still some things that we don't have. For example, we don't have caller ID. We just take the wild cards as they call in. Who knows who we get? So you can call in and, you know, we don't know who you are. 503-231-8187. But, you know, that kind of changes the nature of the radio because it makes you a little quicker on your feet. You know, it's like you don't necessarily screen out people. And you just, of course, you know, there's any radio station is going to have some people who are so regular that you recognize their voice no matter how they try to disguise it. So that, that happens as well. But you are listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Reparations Day Radio, and I'm setting the stage here. You know, it's Thanksgiving Day morning. I drove down here, and Southeast Portland has been hosting a giant murder of crows, a whole massacre of crows, you might say. I've never seen so many crows, and they seem to be having a good time. There was one that walked out in front of my car. You've seen them do this before. I swear they're joking. They're like, oh, yeah. Let's see if you can get me. Well, and then they get out of the way, and they do other things. You know, they drop things in front of your car like nuts so that you will crack the nuts. They're intelligent, interesting, and rascally critters, and they're all over Southeast Portland. So I'm dedicating this show to the massacre of crows that's out there. And the number for you to call in, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, setting the stage for Reparations Day Radio. Now, because of Columbus, I'm reading from Howard Zinn now, because of Columbus' exaggerated report and promises, his second expedition was given 17 ships and more than 1,200 men. Their aim was cold. Their aim was clear. Slaves and, guess, gold. They went from island to island in the Caribbean, taking Indians as captives. But as word spread of the Europeans' intent, they found more and more empty villages on Haiti. They found that the sailors left behind at Fort Navidad had been killed in a battle with the Indians after they had roamed the island in gangs looking for gold, taking women and children as slaves for sex and labor. The charming introduction of European cultural values. Now from his base on Haiti, Columbus sent expedition after expedition into the interior. They found no gold fields, but they had to fill up the ships returning to Spain with some kind of dividend. In the year 1495, they went on a great slave raid, rounded up 1,500 Arawak men, women, and children, put them in pens guarded by Spaniards and dogs, then picked up the 500 best specimens to load onto ships. Of those 500, 200 died en route. The rest arrived alive in Spain and were put up for sale by the archdeacon of the town, who reported that, although the slaves were naked as the day they were born, they showed no more embarrassment than animals. Columbus later wrote, "Let us, in the name of the Holy Trinity, go on sending all the slaves that can be sold." But too many of the slaves died in captivity, and so Columbus, desperate to pay back dividends to those who had invested, had to make good his promise to fill the ships with gold. In the province of Sicao in Haiti, who knows if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he and his men imagined huge fields of gold to exist, and they ordered all persons 14 years or older to collect a certain quantity of gold every 3 months. When they brought it, they were given copper tokens to hang around their necks. Indians found without a copper token had their hands cut off and bled to death. The Indians had been given an impossible task. The only gold around was bits of dust garnered from the streams, so they fled and were hunted down with dogs and were killed. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you have comments or questions, Reparations Day Radio, why don't we just give it back? There's trillions of dollars available to us if we just have the political will to seize it from the billionaires who hide it in offshore, semi-legal and fully illegal, tax-dodging accounts. You know, I think it would be a kick. What do you think? Number to call, 503-231-8187, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland, and Joe's on the air. Hi, Joe.
Hi, this is Joan.
What's happening?
This is not Joan. I was making fun of the fact that you said you always know who's calling from the voice.
Uh-huh.
I know Joan's a caller. But anyway, what I meant to say is you know, I remember when I was in elementary school and we always had the annual, you know, Thanksgiving play that I got, you know, the booby prize stuck as the Indian. And, you know, it was like I was so mad about that, like being the Indian, because I was raised on the John Wayne thing about, you know, the Indians were the bad people and everything. And, you know, it's only now that I realize it's like, no. It was the other way around. And, I guess that's what I got to say about Thanksgiving. Okay.
What do you think about reparations?
Reparations, definitely.
All right.
Definitely.
Shall we give back national parks?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All of that.
All right. So that's two upvotes on the reparations so far.
Well, you know, reparations, there's reparations to the African-American slaves who were brought over here, which, you know, there's reparations to the Japanese people that were interned during the Second World War.
There should be reparations, one might say, rather. There certainly haven't been reparations.
There have been
to the Japanese a little bit, but, you know, not to the... Not restoring where the Japanese community was prior to World War II, certainly.
No. I live right down here in Old Town, and, you know, I see, like, you know, this is called Chinatown and everything, and, you know, mostly, like, Japanese businesses were down here before World War II and everything. And it's like, you know, it's sad thing that, you know, the people that used to have these businesses and everything that were there, they were expirated into these camps and everything, and that's the thing that always Thanksgiving, you know, I used to actually think Thanksgiving was a good thing, you know, that it was like good for the the Indians at the time when they were, you know, exploited, that they welcomed, you know, the Europeans that came over here.
Uh-huh.
And it's like no, now I realize that it's like, no, Thanksgiving is a genocide day for me. So,
thanks for calling in. Reparations Day Radio on KBOO Portland. Number to call, 503-231-8187. So we got two up votes on reparations, and Mary's on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, I'm vote number three.
All right.
I'm a retired teacher, and I recall very vividly the years as they went by and the children were required to write down what they were thankful for and draw pictures of a turkey with their hand and things like that.
That's fun.
And
I should do that right now.
I wish, you know, if I could make all my wishes come true, that the schools would listen to you, the administrators would listen to you, and but probably the only thing you might be able to obtain as far as influencing direct instruction about Reparations Day is playing your program in civics classes or, you know, U.S. government history classes.
Well, you know, this brings me back to Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, which, as I was saying, gets an increase in circulation every year, oddly enough, and it is now available in teaching editions. It's been split into two parts. For that purpose, it's also online, and historyisaweapon.com has the text that I've been reading from.
This is where the parents come in. This is where the power of the parents can move our issue forward. If they know something like, there's a book called People's History of the United States, then they can take that information to their child's history teacher or civics teacher, I don't think they call it civics anymore, and say, well, how about, you know, reading something from this book? And it gives you a hook. And then, you look for an in. And that's all I need to say.
Okay,
thank you very much
for calling. Yeah. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 8:24 in the morning Pacific time. and we are broadcasting on 90.7 FM. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this morning it's the Thanksgiving Day holiday, also known as the Day of Sorrow for Indigenous people. There's a more specific term, Day of Mourning, on Coles Hill overlooking Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts, every year. One of the early sites of the European invasions of the Americas, there is a gathering, fourth Tuesday of November, Day of Mourning, and a spiritual and political ceremony. So that's what today is. And I've been talking about reparations, and wouldn't it be a kick? I mean, it would be sort of a start of redistribution of wealth, and I think it could be a very good thing. Your comments and questions. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Joe's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Well, I agree with your last caller. I really like to draw a turkey with my hand. I think that would solve a lot of problems. And my question is, do you think man has improved since Columbus?
Man? I wasn't talking about man generally. I was talking about European invasion.
I don't talk about, I mean, I know men haven't, but I mean man.
Mankind?
Yes.
No, certainly not.
Certainly not. Same old, same old.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Teresa.
Well, what's your point? You still there?
I was looking for the good news.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't have any to offer in that way. No, of course, you know, these atrocities are not unique to Europeans, but the fact that the Europeans, whose language we speak, perpetrated this, and the fact that our history has been kind of bent around so that we ignore that, that's significant, and that's the point I'm trying to make here. So thank you very much for calling in. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The chief source, this is from Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, the chief source and on many matters, the only source of information about what happened on the islands after Columbus came, is Bartolome de las Casas, who as a young priest participated in the conquest of Cuba. For a time, he owned a plantation on which Indian slaves worked, but he gave that up and became a vehement critic of Spanish cruelty. Las Casas transcribed Columbus Journal, and in his 50s began a multi-volume history of the Indies. In it, he describes the Indians. They are agile, he says, can swim long distances, especially the women. They are not completely peaceful because they do battle from time to time with other tribes, but their casualties seem small and they fight when they are individually moved to do so because of some grievance, not on the orders of captains or kings. Women in Indian society were treated so well as to startle the Spaniards. Las Casas describes sex relations, quoting, "Marriage laws are non-existent. Men and women alike choose their mates and leave them as they please, without offense, jealousy, or anger. They multiply in great abundance. Pregnant women work to the last minute and give birth almost painlessly. Up to the next day, they bathe in the river and are as clean and healthy as before giving birth. If they tire of their men, they give themselves abortions with herbs that force stillbirths." Oh, a little reference to the pharmaceutical technology of the indigenous. Returning to the quote, "covering their shameful parts with leaves or cotton cloth, although on the whole Indian men and women look upon total nakedness with as much casualness as we look upon a man's head or at his hands," end quote. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, Reparations Day Radio, and Mike's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I vote for reparations.
All right.
I want to share something with you that I know for a fact, and natives in along the rivers and such that I've come in contact with know this as well. They're not ignorant of this. They know that if these treaties to protect native salmon and native fishing rights and native resource rights weren't in existence from the 1855s and such, there would not be one salmon in that river. It's only these treaties that have protected those stocks at all. So,
to the extent that they're on it at all.
They have been in the sense that they've been protected. And also, the limits on other folks that aren't with the reservations and the tribes and such, they, like, for instance, the sporties who spent $50,000 on a jet boat but cry because they're limited to single cast lines and complain about the natives' gill net fishing. Like I say, if it was if it was open to everyone to gill net, there wouldn't be one fish in this whole river system, in the ocean.
So there's
a fact.
And there's the force of history right there. Thank you very much for your comment.
Thank you.
503-231-8187. It's 8:30, and you're listening to KBOO Portland Reparations Day Radio. Been talking about, really seriously, reparations. And the funny thing is, since we live in an empire, it's incredible to think about it. I mean, really, you're going to talk about the 1% of the wealth. 1% of the world's population steps on airplanes or has a car. That's us, by and large. I know a lot of you, great number of you, do not have a car or and certainly cannot afford an airplane flight. But I'm talking about the society generally, and 99% of the world does not, really, in terms of population, have that opportunity. And it's that 1% that has destroyed the environment. So that brings to the question that I get any year that I actually go in the air. I've noticed, and I've done this since the first time I did a genocide cover-up day was 1987 at KAZI Radio in Austin, Texas. People call up. Well, they didn't call up that year, but when I get on the air, if I did calls, people call up and say, "What are you grateful for?" which is just sort of a knee-jerk thing. I think people aren't listening to the station at all and call up and ask me that. So I'm warning you, if you ask me that, I'm going to tell you. Because I'm in a mood. But the number to call, 503-231-8187, with your comments and questions. And Terrell, is that correct? Did I get that name right?
Yes, it is.
Hi there.
Hi, good morning to you, Teresa.
Good morning.
And hooray, hooray for your mood. And also, I applaud your brave heart. You know, it's not so comfortable to talk about these things in America. In fact, much of it is just downright hidden truth. I mean, it's 2013, and we're just starting to come around to the idea that, wow, you know, what happened to all these people? Where did these people go? You know, I mean, South Africa and other countries that we have pointed to the U.S. government.
Yeah, we're left to surmise that they are discommoded by obsolescence. Pardon my syllables. You know, they just sort of faded away for no particular reason, or maybe just because they just didn't have what it took or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you look at the real history, oh, look at there. They were slain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in many, many ways. But I will go on from that and say, since we're talking about the whole truth, I'll bring up another truth.
Alrighty.
At KABU, you have a number of people working, or not working, volunteering, who are outright Aleister Crowley fans. They love Aleister Crowley, as did the Beatles and a number of rock and roll groups. And Aleister Crowley is still kind of a formative influence across the culture.
They must not be in my immediate circle, because we think, the people that I know think of him as an arrogant and conceited jerk, but go ahead.
Creepy guy who is a raging racist who rants on and on about how horrible indigenous people are and how they should be destroyed around the globe. Hitler admired Crowley. He was the only British person that Hitler admired. But anyway, at ultra-liberal, you know, free-thinking KABU, we have a lot of closet racists. But anyway, that's just the truth. But then moving on from there, I do support totally, and many, many of us do, who listen with our hearts as well as our minds, you bringing forth all of this information. But I'd also like to say a good place to begin with reparations are good, strong hearts like yours, and men in particular. Being a trans man, you are a particular strong heart. You show your bravery right there and your truth. But other men, typical, you know, straight, or not straight, but one gender men, let's call them that, one heart men, they need to start stepping forward in public acts of concern and support for women, because Mother Earth, she's in us women, she's in all of us. And one way we can start healing is we start showing the fact that women are also this hidden, persecuted population, that there's been a lot that's come upon the planet against women for a long time.
Well, interesting you should mention that. You know, when I'm talking about oppression of peoples, it seems to me that the first capacity for... Okay, well, let's see. I want to back up a little bit and say I'm not down on white men as white men. I'm down on certain patterns of behavior, which are reflected in the culture as we find it today. And, well, you know what? I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, well, all strong hearts step forward and shield people, do good things. But women need to, we need to be supported more by men instead of people standing back like, oh, there's a movie where atrocious things are happening to that female subject. Oh, there's another movie. Why do we accept this kind of hate?
Really, eek, when will the brave man save me? Well, and I also think that psychologically the oppression of peoples generally seems to start with that divide within the genders that I lived 43 years as a man. I was certainly taught to turn against my own mother in vicious ways. And I don't mean personally my own mother, but I just mean to turn myself against half of the human race and
please
to believe that I was superior.
That. Please talk about that more sometime, too. Please talk about the indoctrination. Please do.
Sure thing.
And
thanks.
I will let you go. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful Thanksgiving.
Thanks for calling in. Now, this is Reparations Day Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, and been having a good time talking to callers and calling out history and reading from Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, which is kind of a tradition here on KBOO Radio. And I appreciate people calling me brave and stuff, but, you know, actually in the context of KBOO Radio, it's the easiest thing in the world coming here and quote Howard Zinn. I mean, there's nothing but smiles and nods around here. But I am conscious that, of course, within the greater society, it's considered, well, I'll just go ahead and try and quote Howard Zinn to the wrong people. There's a an article on, speaking of cultural divide, there's an article on Alternet that I just saw. It's on their front page, and it says 10 ways to deal with right-wing Christian relatives over the holidays. And just as soon as I saw it, I started laughing to myself because I come from Texas, and my immediate family are, you know, they're sweet people, but I'm transgender. I'm a trans woman, and I just go ahead and use my masculinized voice on the air. Although I'll tell you that as a transgender person, it's always been quite a confusion to me, especially when I was a little girl in a man's body and wondering, you know, what I was going to do with this manly voice. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't... it's a thing, and it is not a spirit. And if you can hear the girl behind, if you can hear the woman behind the man's voice, well, good for you. Not exactly obvious, is it? So that's why I keep saying I'm Teresa, and I'm transgendered, and I'm also, well, before I go into my personal history, I'll just say that you can call in with your comments and questions on Reparations Day Radio, and we've got upvotes on reparations so far, and... they talk about on Alternet today. They talk about that you have leverage. Their number one recommendation is to newly out gay people. Remember, they have leverage when dealing with recalcitrant or even angry parents. Their presence, liberals and atheists can learn from this. If your family is really overbearing with attempts to convert you or incessant hollering about their right wing beliefs, simply tell them to cut it out, or you'll cut out your visits. Now, I can't recommend this. It hasn't worked in my case. My folks, they're so sweet, and they want to protect me, and but they can't bear to reveal. This is where it gets a little ugly. Can't bear to reveal to the greater family. So I am persona non grata at family greetings, at family gatherings, and I don't go to Texas, and I won't pretend that I was going to rush off to Texas anyway. It's kept secret from the family, and this and that sort of thing always pops up on these holidays, and everybody gets together, and those cultural divides pop up, and it gets kind of, it looms large, doesn't it? Their number two recommendation at family gatherings, do not argue over points of fact. Sometimes you will feel the need to push back, if only to establish your boundaries. There's a good way and a bad way to do this. One way to avoid is trying to correct them when they say blatantly untrue things. Yes, it's maddening to hear your relatives spout lies about science, politics, and history that they picked up on AM radio and Fox News. But ask yourself honestly, has correcting them ever resulted in anything but denials and hurt feelings? And let's see now, who wrote this article on Alternet? This is... It is Amanda Marcotte. I hope I pronounced that correctly. So you can find that at alternet.org. And you are listening to KBOO Portland. And this is Reparations Day Radio. You are welcome to call in with your comments or questions. And I'm continuing in the narrative, setting the table, as it were, with the real history of how we got around. And stick around, because we will get around to Thanksgiving Day. But we're talking about Bartolome de las Casas, a contemporary of Columbus. And he tells how the Spaniards, quoting Howard Zinn here, and quoting Las Casas, grew more conceited every day, end quote, and after a while refused to walk any distance. They, quoting a contemporary, an observer, and a participant, they, quote, rode the backs of Indians if they were in a hurry, end quote. Or were carried on hammocks by Indians running in relays, quoting, in this case, they also had Indians carry large leaves to shade them from the sun and others to fan them with goose wings, end quote. Total control led to total cruelty. The Spaniards, quoting, thought nothing of knifing Indians by tens and twenties and of cutting slices off them to test the sharpness of their blades, end quote. Las Casas tells of how two of these so-called Christians met two Indian boys one day, each carrying a parrot. They took the parrots and, for fun, beheaded the boys. The Indians' attempts to defend themselves failed, and when they ran off into the hills, they were found and killed. Departing from Howard Zinn's text, now remember, this is a warrior caste that came over there, and they had just unified city-states in Europe. The Moors had just been expelled from Spain. If you're wondering who the Moors were, they were Muslim, and they were black people. Beethoven, Ludwig van Beethoven, for example, was a Moor. And quite black. But there was, you know, this precedence of militarism, military skill, and vicious race relations was already in these people's heads when they arrived in the Americas. So returning to Zinn, so Las Casas reports, quote, they suffered and died in the mines and other labors in desperate silence, knowing not a soul in the world to whom they could turn for help, end quote. He describes their work in the mines, quoting, mountains are stripped from top to bottom and bottom to top 1,000 times. You know, we're talking 500 years ago. They dig, split rocks, move stones, and carry dirt on their backs to wash it in the rivers, while those who wash gold stay in the water all the time with their backs bent so constantly it breaks them. And when water invades the mines, the most arduous task of all is to dry the mines by scooping up pans full of water and throwing it up outside, end quote. After each 6 or 8 months' work in the mines, which was the time required of each crew to dig enough gold for melting, up to a third of the men died. So I've been talking about reparations. And again, I'm talking about reparations in context of extreme maldistribution of wealth in the United States and in the world. And I was talking about how we're the 1%, but what I was getting around to say is you don't realize just how rich this nation is, because it is simply impossible to conceive what $1 trillion is and what a billionaire is and what power a billionaire has. And I say, with compassion in my heart for everyone, including the billionaires, that there should be no billionaires. There should be no billionaires. There should be no billionaires. You will never be a billionaire. Now, I think it'd be wonderful for anyone to have up to, millions of dollars. Millions. 1,000 times 1,000. Wow, that's great. Gives you a little disproportion, but there's got to be a limit. I don't know what the limit should be. In order to show that politically I am not a vicious person, I say it should be 10 million. So let's take people like the Koch brothers and the Walton heirs, who are billionaires, multi-billionaires. And even the billionaires that we kind of maybe sort of like Warren Buffett. I don't know what the deal is with that. I mean, he does say some good things. And let's say, okay, we were crazy. What were you thinking? What were we thinking? I mean, you know, hooray for you that you've had this experience. And you can have $10 million now. That's going to make them feel terrible. And it's a funny thing. It's just human nature. If you were to get $10 million, you would do flips. But you know, limiting them to $10 million, how they would cry out, how they do cry out at any such reference at a proper distribution of wealth. But come on, let's be rational about this. If we're to have any, you know, I've already said that, you know, I've laughed at the idea that this is a democracy, but if you're to have any democratic leverage at all, you simply cannot have billionaires, because as I believe it was Harry Frick, who was associated with the steel industry a century ago, said it's easy enough to hire, and you know, I'm roughly quoting him, it's easy enough to hire half of the people to shoot the other half. You got billionaires, can't have no participation, no democracy on anything. You can't have democracy on anything that actually matters to the billionaires, because they'll, you know, they've got way too much power. So no billionaires, please. And the fact that there are billionaires, and the fact that there is a situation where we have trillions of dollars literally in offshore tax dodging accounts means that this reparation that I suggest is painless to all of you, to me, to anyone, because we're not talking about, you know, and, you know, the question of whether each and every one of us should, you know, repent in some substantial way in order to change our habits. That's another question. It's a good question. You know, moral question. But when it comes to paying reparations, well, heck, I mean, all we have to do is achieve rational distribution of wealth. And I suppose the first point in achieving a rational distribution of wealth is letting everyone know just how wildly disproportionate the distribution of wealth is. I mean, it's just absolutely insane, especially when you consider that 80% of the population of the United States, it's just, how can it be? How can it be? But 80% of the population of the United States is really just a few paychecks away from utter penury. Time is 8:46. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Reparations Day Talk Radio. I invite your calls and comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Love to talk to you. And we've got several upvotes on reparations so far, which I'm glad to hear. And I'm not surprised to hear that from the KBOO audience, but it is a broadcast, so I know that there are people tuning in, tuning around, and that's how you find KBOO radio, because we don't do a lot of advertising. So now I think about it, except for some bumper stickers, I don't think we do any at all. But we're out there, and we're supported by anyone who cares, and that means that you can pull us up right now or browse around, as the engineer says. Pull up KBOO.fm, and you can see that we have an easy method for you to contribute any amount that you like. It's called the tip jar. It's up on the upper right side of the screen of the website, KBOO.fm. And right now you're listening to KBOO Portland, KBOO 90.7 in Portland, other frequencies elsewhere, returning to Howard Zinn's narrative of the Europeans encountering the indigenous peoples of the United States after... while the men were sent many miles away to the mines, the wives remained to work the soil for the European invaders, forced into the excruciating job of digging and making thousands of hills for cassava plants. Quoting, thus, husbands and wives were together only once every 8 or 10 months, and when they met, they were so exhausted and depressed on both sides, they ceased to procreate. This is quoting, this is from Howard Zinn's. And he is quoting Bartolome de las Casas, a contemporary of the Columbus invasion. He writes, as for the newly born, they died early because their mothers, overworked and famished, had no milk to nurse them. And for this reason, while I was in Cuba, 7,000 children died in 3 months. Some mothers even drowned their babies from sheer desperation. In this way, husbands died in the mines, wives died at work, and children died from lack of milk. And so in a short time, this land, which was so great, so powerful, and fertile, was depopulated. My eyes have seen these acts so foreign to human nature, and now I tremble as I write. Bartolome de las Casas, a quote of Bartolome de las Casas from 1508, quoting Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, when Bartolome arrived on Hispaniola in 1508, he said... there were 60,000 people living on this island, including the Indians, so that from 1494 to 1508, over 3 million people had perished from war, slavery, and the mines. Who in future generations will believe this? I myself, writing it as a knowledgeable eyewitness, can hardly believe it, in quotes. Thus began the history 500 years ago of the European invasion of the Indian settlements in the Americas. That beginning, when you read Las Casas, even if his figures are exaggerations, were there 3 million Indians to begin with, as he says, or less than 1 million, or as some historians have calculated, 8 million, as others now believe? And departing from the text, I think that even since Zinn wrote that, looking at the megalithic, the Snake Mounds and et cetera, the higher estimates are correct, and there were great civilizations on this continent. Returning to the quote, that beginning is conquest, slavery, death. When we read the history books given to children in the United States, it all starts with heroic adventure. There is no bloodshed, and Columbus Day is a celebration. Past the elementary and high schools, there are only occasional hints of something else. Samuel Eliot Morison, the Harvard historian, was the most distinguished writer on Columbus, author of a multi-volume biography, and was himself a sailor who retraced Columbus' route across the Atlantic. In his popular book, Christopher Columbus, Mariner, written in 1954, he tells about the enslavement and the killing, quote, the cruel policy initiated by Columbus and pursued by his successors resulted in complete genocide, end quote. And that's on one page, buried halfway into the telling of a grand romance. In the book's last paragraph, Morison sums up his view of Columbus. He had his faults and his defects, but they were, this is a quote, they were largely the defects of the qualities that made him great. His indomitable will, his superb faith in God, and his mission as the Christ-bearer to lands beyond the seas, his stubborn persistence, despite neglect, poverty, and discouragement, but there was no flaw, no dark side to the most outstanding and essential of his qualities, his seamanship. Not making that up. One can lie outright about the past. One can omit facts which might lead to unacceptable conclusions. Morison does neither. He refuses to lie about Columbus. He does not admit the story of mass murder. Indeed, he describes it with the harshest word one can use, genocide. But he does something else. He mentions the truth quickly and goes on to other things more important to him. And departing from Howard Zinn's text, that's very, very familiar to me. And that's why I do my regular program, which is called Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, because it isn't really that there's a complete absence of truth in what we call modern day journalism. It's just that we have this habit of emphasizing the will, the policies of the very rich. We have callers waiting online. I'm sorry to keep you waiting so long. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Time is 8:51. You're listening to KBOO Portland. LJ, you're on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how are you?
Doing well. Yourself?
Very, very well. Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy Native American Genocide Cover-Up Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Teresa, can we talk about Pope Francis's scathing critique of capitalism?
We can. It's very significant. But before you say another thing about Pope, there's still a Pope Emeritus who hates queers, and Pope Francis will not, and I get to use the word queer because I am one.
Okay.
Pope Francis isn't letting up on that either, and I call that the baseball bat policy. In other words, what they say and what they leave standing is sufficient for the boys to get out their baseball bats, and we know what happens then. So go. But what he said about capitalism is great, so go on.
He sees, apparently he sees capitalism for what it is. It's extremely exploitive. It exploits natural resources. It exploits people. Perpetual growth.
Well, if I may misquote,
which is totally unrealistic, and now the so-called trickle down theory is essentially the trickled on theory.
Yeah, I always thought that you know, I can't believe that people ever went for that, because it always sounded kind of nasty to me when I think about the billionaires and the top floors and well, can't go there on FCC regulated airspace. But yeah, I think I'm following you on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much for
thanks for calling in.
And it's amazing to me that I mean, this critique is not on your commercial media stations at all.
Huh. Well, I don't feel particularly amazed about it, but you're right, it ain't. Thanks for calling. Number to call, thank you. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If I may misquote someone, under capitalism, man exploits man. Under Stalinism, it's just the opposite. But I'm interested in your comments and questions. 503-231-8187. Hi, George, you're on the air.
Hi, Teresa. This is a wonderful program, and another vote for reparations from me.
All right. How many is that? Are we up to five now? Five or six?
Okay. But I want to say I think we could also increase the scope of this. The Native Americans, African Americans, and the Irish, and the people who fled from various parts of Latin America and other parts of the world, the Chinese, the Japanese, as you mentioned, have been brutally used and mistreated, and their human rights abused here. And in the way in which people died from occupational diseases and occupational accidents, and including the Caucasian people, and but especially noticeable is the dreadful toll of occupational illnesses on people of color who were given the worst and most dangerous jobs. And I want to mention that one of the things that can work with working toward reparations and getting to the society where we could actually think about that we could do this and that we would feel like it is to remind ourselves that people in general who worked in industry in the U.S. were dying for decades at the rate of about 100,000 deaths per year in the United States, probably for 30, 40, 50 years, from occupational diseases. And in case anybody wonders, is this really, you know, documented or supported by a book? There's a book called Bitter Wages, published by the Ralph Nader Study Group report, as the Ralph Nader Study Group report on disease and injury on the job. And it's from the 1970s. And a later book from about the 90s is called A Job to Die For.
That's a good one as well, isn't it?
Yes, and she also gives, that's by Lisa Cullen, and she also gives a figure that amounts to about 100,000 a year. And I suppose the figure may have shrunk a bit. But one of the things I just wanted to underline is that if we're going to get to the point where we can consider reparations, we owe reparations to the millions and millions of workers in the U.S. and also, I should say, elsewhere where the U.S.'s thug armies have enforced dreadful, unsafe working conditions in other countries and also wages which starve families. So it's kind of like I'm beginning to think, well, we're going to have to realize how much all people, including white people, but especially people of color everywhere, have been exploited by this system. And we're going to have to build some kind of movement that says enough of this profits before human health and before the health of our beloved Mother Earth. And that's just what I want.
Well, well said. Thank you very much.
Thanks, and I really thank the program. Okay, bye now. Thanks.
Thanks for calling in. The time is 8:57, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. We've got 2 hours of talk radio and having a really good time with it. Of course, this is Turkey Day, and that's why when I'm talking about reparations, I first emphasize the real history of Europeans and indigenous people in this continent. And but, you know, it is Turkey Day, and a lot of people got the day off. Maybe you've got the day off, and There are certain traditions, one of which is, and thanks to, and shout out to Steve and Sky, the radio dog, who are now taking their leave, and Rock Engineer is coming in. We'll have an announcement in just a moment. But, you know, there are traditions. For example, there is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade coming up, and the broadcast here will be in just a few minutes. And so I just wanted to say that the secret theme for this year's parade is I Want to Be a Mormon for Halloween. So keep that theme in mind as you watch the parade, and we'll have some other secret themes coming up if we get a chance. Number to call with your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and I've just heard that Pear is calling in. Is this Pear of KBOO?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Pear.
Yeah, I had my vote.
All right.
But I just the other day I came across an interesting fact that kind of surprised me. Do you know how many billionaires there are in the world?
About 700, is that right? No, that's the United States, right?
Multiplied, no, but in the world.
In the world. No, I don't know.
2,170.
That ain't very many.
Well, I don't know. It's
it's 2,170 too many.
Well, that's true, yes. Yes, but the thing is, seems to me it wasn't that long ago where a billionaire was something very unusual. You know, there were millionaires, but a billionaire was kind of like,
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, I think there's no bottom to class oppression. So if we don't stop this progress, there will be trillionaires before you know it.
Well, I think they control about $33 trillion or something like that. But anyway, I thought I'd pass that on. 2,170 billionaires in the world.
Man, we can take them easy.
The growth industry.
Well, give them an ice cream and a crying towel and bust them down to $10 million each. Let's go.
Hey, okay. Goodbye.
Thanks for calling in. Time is 9 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's Reparations Day Radio, and I've been taking your calls at 503-231-8187. But first, before we go to the next caller, I believe that we have an announcement from the Gay Yellow Pages, and we'll find out what we got here.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
Here it is. As I was saying, it is 9 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's Reparations Day Radio. Please call in with your comments or questions, 503-231-8187. Now let's talk about, let's get around to Thanksgiving legend. The murder of a white trader, Indian kidnapper, and troublemaker became an excuse to make war on the Pequods in 1636. I'll give you more on that in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to Deborah, who's calling in. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
I'm honored, so honored to be on your show and so honored to have followed Perifogreen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great to hear Per's voice, isn't it?
So H-E double toothpicks, they should give them money, land, and everything. Yes, yes, yes. And you know what? I can't believe it took this long, and I do know quite a bit about it because I have studied about it, and I cannot believe that it's embarrassing to be an American. I hope they don't come and pick me up now. They probably will. But because of that, and there were women and people and men who were working on this issue in 1860-something and trying to pass legislation in the Congress to give them, you know, more land. And I can't believe that how many years later is it now?
You know, and as I was saying,